Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, October the 31st. Happy Halloween. Is partisanship destroying America? Do politicians need to look for common ground on the issues that divide us? Is the divide really so wide? Well, we're going to talk with two guests this hour, one a conservative and one a liberal, who say we can find common ground. They find it in their column for USA Today, and they describe their ideas and their fix in the new book, Common Ground, How to Stop the Partisan War That Is Destroying America. I'm sure you know them, Cal Thomas and Bob Beckel. And we will welcome your thoughts and questions for them. Do you think there is common ground when it comes to, say, the war in Iraq, or gay marriage, or the issue that matters most to you? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And please include your first name and your community with your email. We will wonder if you want politicians to stop all the partisan bickering and find common ground. Or we'll wonder maybe you want your side to fight tooth and nail for your side of the issues that matter to you. We welcome your thoughts and questions. Let me welcome at least one of our guests. I know we're having a bit of an issue getting a hold of the other. But we do have Cal Thomas on the line. Cal Thomas, a conservative, writes a weekly syndicated column that appears in more than 600 newspapers across the country. He is a frequent panelist on the program Fox News Watch. And he is, as mentioned, a co-writer of the USA Today column, Common Ground, and co-author of the book, Common Ground, How to Stop the Partisan War That Is Destroying America. We are still trying to reach Bob Beckel. I think we have a little trouble with his phone number, but we'll, I hope, work it out. Cal Thomas, good morning.
Joy, good morning. I'm so delighted to be with you, and I hope you're able to get through to Bob. I think one of the things we want to stress in being on together is that we are good friends. We don't compromise our political beliefs, and we believe the common ground is best found out of partisanship. But what we attack in our book is not partisanship, which is good. We have ideas that matter, but the corrosive polarization that is going on in this country, where the American people are being played for fools by both left-wing and right-wing polarizers. I, as a former vice president of the Moral Majority for 5 years, the only non-journalistic job I've ever held, used to sit in these things called marketing meetings, and both sides do this, and we'd come up with themes that would likely extract contributions from people. On our side, it was gay rights or abortion or secular humanism or something related to patriotism. We always thought that we conservatives had a corner on patriotism, a patent, a copyright on it, which is bogus. And we send these letters out, and people would send money in. Now, the other side was doing the same thing. They're saying, send us $25 or $50 or whatever you can afford, and we'll save you from these Bible-thumping bigots who want to impose their morality on you. So both sides do this. The check's clear, and they're living in nice houses and flying around in private planes, but the people's business doesn't get done.
Yeah. So the difference between partisanship and polarization is name-calling.
Well, that's part of it, but we use as a model the Lincoln-Douglas debates 150 years ago next year, in which these two giants in 1858 running for the United States Senate from Illinois toured together in seven Illinois towns. They had a moderator whose chief function was to introduce them and leave the stage. Now, imagine that in today's sound-biting, get-my-face-on-and-ask-the-irrelevant-question generation of journalists. And for 2 and 3 hours, these men debated each other on things that really mattered. people would come with picnic baskets and blankets and lay them out on the ground and listen to this. And at the end, they'd demand more debate. We'd like to see this happen with the nominees for both parties next year when they are finally selected, because they're not running for president of the Republican or Democratic parties. They're running for president of the United States, and whoever wins is still going to have to govern the entire country. And we need as many people in an age in which we have so many enemies trying to destroy us, working to support maybe not all the president's policies, but to certainly strengthen him or her to stand against the enemies that wish to undermine us.
Yeah. So what are you calling for in Common Ground? What is it that you'd like to see happen?
Well, a number of things. First of all, we think that we need to take some of the poison, a lot of the poison out of this. We interviewed many current and former elected officials for this book, and almost all of them are sick of the process. They feel that the nonstop fundraising, the nonstop campaigning, they can't be human. They can't put the country first. You reach out across the aisle and shake the hand or try to compromise with your political opponent, and there's somebody either on your side or the other side, and I hate the whole idea of sides, by the way. The other side is really the Taliban. If I'm a Republican and Bob is a Democrat, he's not on the other side. He's my fellow American. I think what we do in the book is we say, first, you have to agree that there is a problem, a particular issue, whether it's health insurance for children or terrorists who want to destroy us or taxes or spending or whatever. So once you identify the problem, and that's one of the problems, by the way, we don't often enough identify it, then you can sit down with a certain amount of goodwill and say, now what's the best way, consistent with the principles we hold, to try to reach an accommodation, to move the ball forward, with neither side getting its own way 100% of the time. We take six big issues at the end of the book and argue them through. Neither one of us gets our way, but I think we could argue that both sides get something. The problem is today in our polarized politics, people don't want to do that. Take a look at Joe Lieberman's race up in Connecticut. Now, Joe Lieberman is a good liberal Democrat. He's a patriotic American. But because the extreme left thought he was wrong on the war, they tried to throw him out of office. Fortunately, there were enough independents and Republicans who voted for him that managed to keep him in. But this is the kind of thing that we're talking about. You have to be 100% true blue to your base, left or right, or you are somehow a sellout. And that's the kind of poison that I think has turned a lot of people off.
Yeah. Well, where is the common ground when it comes to the war in Iraq and those who think it the troops need to come home and those who think the troops have to stay?
Well, I don't want to speak for Bob, but we do this often enough that I think I know his position on this. Both Bob and I acknowledge that whatever the mistakes, and I certainly agree there have been plenty of them made in this war, and I can enumerate them, but I'm sure all of your listeners could make their own list, we cannot afford a failed state. We cannot afford to just pull out and allow Iran, for example, which has already indicated great interest in suzerainty over the Iraqi state and is sending in arms and terrorist personnel to try to undermine the American and the Iraqi effort. Let's not forget that they wrote their own constitution. They voted three times at the risk of their own life and limb. I think it was 12 million people all told for the kind of government and the right to select their own government. I think so. We have an obligation there to make sure that this works somehow. And the whole idea of pulling out or staying the course, these are just two extreme things. We need to come to an agreement, and Bob and I have, that we can't afford a failed state. Now, once we come to that, then I think that we can negotiate a way to make sure that that happens.
We are talking with Cal Thomas. He is the co-author of the book Common Ground, How to Stop the Partisan War That Is Destroying America, also co-writer of the USA Today column, Common Ground. His co-writer is Bob Beckel, a liberal, one of Washington's leading political analysts and a longtime political consultant. We are still looking for him. A problem with the telephone number that we have, apparently. Hopefully, we will find Bob Beckel, and he and Cal Thomas will continue to talk about where we can find common ground on the important issues of our time. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 20 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Halloween, Wednesday, October the 31st. Stay with us coming up later today. Lots of Halloween-related programming. Larry Mueller, after 11 o'clock, will be talking about the haunted Great Lakes with an author. We'll also hear from Gene Farrakh as guest about the cultural history of Frankenstein after 3 o'clock. And then later at 5:30 this afternoon, it's the Capitol Steps, the Halloween special, Politics Takes a Holiday. The Capitol Steps, a musical troupe that pokes fun at politicians of all stripes. It's a bipartisan political satire on the Capitol Steps at 5:30 this afternoon. We're talking about bipartisanship and how to get more of it and how to stop the partisan war that is destroying America. Our guest, Cal Thomas, he is a co-author of this book, Common Ground. And as soon as we find, or if we find, his counterpart, his co-author, Bob Beckel, we will bring him into the conversation. Otherwise, we'll just count on you to call in your questions at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk at wpr.org. Cal Thomas, you say in the book that the major party politics faces extinction. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think the we've tried third parties in the past, and we're not suggesting that a third party would work here. But I think the old way of doing things, as we saw partially and mainly, I think, last night in the Democratic debate in Philadelphia, and we also see to a certain extent in the various Republican debates, it's the old model. You demonize your opponent. You seek to isolate them as being less of an American, less a visionary than you are, instead of effectively presenting your own vision for America and empowering individuals. The fundraising, the sound biting, the if you want to call it swift voting, but that those kinds of commercials, and we're seeing them now in local elections around the country. We have one here in Virginia where I live next week, and we're all already seeing the you have the Halloween like music, you know, the drums and the brass, and ooh, if you elect this person, they're going to do horrible things to you. They're going to come and bite your neck and suck all the blood out of you and rob you of all of your money. And lay down our arms and make people unsafe in their neighborhoods. And then the other side said, well, if you elect this person, they're going to be warmongers and drop bombs on everybody. This is not the kind of conversation that normal Americans, including in Wisconsin, have every day. Most of us live in mixed neighborhoods with Republicans and Democrats. Some of our kids go to school together. Some even go to church, synagogue together, go to PTA meetings, Rotary Club, Kiwanis, whatever. They don't throw open their windows at 7 in the morning and one neighbor yells at the other one, hey, you left-wing commie pinko, what are you going to do to ruin America today? And the other person says, you right-wing fascist imposer morality, what are you going to do to ruin America today? Real people don't live like that. But the politicians gin up this this stupid conversation that real Americans are not having in hopes that, and cable, of course, cable TV and some talk radio exacerbates this because it makes them a lot of money.
Well, we found your friend and colleague and co-author.
Oh, hooray.
All right. Bob Beckel is one of Washington's leading political analysts, a longtime political consultant, assistant secretary of state under the Carter administration, was Walter Mondale's campaign manager during the 1984 presidential election. Bob Beckel, a co-author, along with Cal Thomas, of the book Common Ground, How to Stop the Partisan War That is Destroying America, and also the regular USA Today column, Common Ground. Bob Beckel, good morning.
Well, thank you. I'm sorry. We had some communications problems. I would normally blame it on the Republicans, but I won't do that, given the fact that we're talking common ground here. And by the way, I appreciate the Mondale conversation. I did a lot of other races. That one was the largest loss in the history of American politics. But then again, that's all right.
That's what I have in my intro bio for you.
I know. You can't help yourself. I understand.
Well, Bob Beckel, why don't you, since we've heard Cal Thomas, give us your, what's the difference between, What's wrong with being partisan? You don't have anything wrong with being partisan, right? You like partisanship. You just think that you don't need to be polarized.
Yeah, you know, there's a big difference. We're not against partisanship. I mean, that's what makes, the political system in America work. You have two different major parties. But the difference is that partisan voices that can become bipartisan voices with a reasonable conversation have been pushed off the center stage of American politics and replaced by polarizers who have no interest in sitting down and talking and finding consensus. And you know, Cal and I were both polarizers ourselves back when Cal was with the Moral Majority and I was on Crossfire. And so maybe there's a little mea culpa here. But when we were doing that, polarization was sort of at the fringe of American politics. And now it has now become so centered in American politics, it's paralyzed government. And people are not getting the government they want or need, and they're angry about it. And I think we wrote this book really for them because we understand polarizers. We were polarizers, and we expose them in the book, and we talk about ways that they can be defeated. And I think the American people are beginning to stir on this finally, and that's good because polarization used to be an academic discussion or an inside the Beltway conversation here. It's now become a conversation out in the country because it is affecting people directly because things aren't getting done. So this is really about reflecting that sentiment and how you go about dealing with it.
We have a lot of callers online already. Mark in McHenry, Illinois joins us first. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Morning, Joy and Cal and Bob. I really like what I'm hearing. I think it's about time. And Cal kind of jumped on one of my lines here, and I think there's a couple of things from a societal standpoint that have really ginned up this polarization. And one of them is right-wing talk radio, which I used to listen to a lot and just got so disgusted with it I just completely caved on it. Basically, it's a commercial enterprise used to get rating points and whip and advertising dollars by whipping people up into a black and white sort of a mentality. There's no grays, just black and white. You're for us or against us. And on the other side, blogs. I know blogs are a wonderful thing, but frankly, I see blogs as largely as an electronic version of self-publishing, okay? A lot of the people that run blogs, especially on the fringes, are people that would normally be standing on a soapbox in a park wearing a sandwich board and don't have anything really really constructive or coherent to say, and yet because they have a computer and they live in their mother's basement, they can run a blog. So I really think that there are forces which, for their own reasons, either commercial or just to have somebody to scream at, are helping to, that the polarization isn't just in government circles. It's in the populace too, and I think there are a lot of reasons why it's happening.
Yeah, Mark, thanks for the call.
Can I comment on the blog part of that?
Yes.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, look. People, these blogs on the far right and the far left, and listen, you go to, on my side, moveon.org, there have been some things that have been said that should not have been said, but leaving that aside, you know what this is? These blogs are gas stations, filling stations for polarizers. They go into them every day, find out what the latest line is, the polarization line, they get filled up with it, they get shined up, and they go back out, and they start shouting it. I agree with you on right-wing radio. The fact is that there is a commercial market out there more than there is for liberal radio. But let's face it, I mean, in both sides, in the Internet particularly, you're finding things that are just so outrageous, and there's no editing. I mean, these people can say whatever they want. There are no editors. And people go in there and take it as truth, and that's really dangerous. I mean, so far they haven't necessarily beat somebody, but they will because they're getting bigger and bigger. Fortunately, so far, the middle America, the people who are more moderate voters, are not going in and listening to those things or reading those things, but who knows? I mean, they're everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Cal Thomas?
Yes. I don't think all talk radio is the same. There are some that has more satire than others, but I agree. I don't listen to a lot of it. I listen to Rush because he's a personal friend. I like him a lot. Well, Sean Hannity's a personal friend of both Bob's and mine as well, but this kind of stuff is what helps fan the flames. Look, when I was growing up in this business, I started out as a copy boy at NBC when I was 18 years old. There were three broadcast networks, ABC, NBC, and CBS. people watch the news usually together over dinner at 6:30 and had a conversation, most people, about the issues of the day. Now we're into narrowcasting. People tune in and read only those things that affirm what they already think they believe. Now, I have a lot of liberal friends. I have a lot of dialogue with liberal friends and Democrats. They're not my enemies. They're my fellow Americans. I think it's outrageous to paint people of the other party or persuasion as the enemy of the country, and a lot of that happens. Bob isn't my enemy. He's my friend. Both of our dads served in World War II. We pay taxes to the same government. Nobody wants their tax money to be misused by either party. But if we see each other as demons, and we tune into only those things that affirm that in somebody else, and we soundbite each other to death, then we're playing into the hands of our real enemies, which are not our fellow Americans.
Yeah, so did it make any sense for Congress to condemn MoveOn.org over that General Betrayus ad, or Congress to say, you know, Rush Limbaugh should get off the air?
I mean, this is the part of what we're talking about, Joy. This is stupid. Is this why we elect United States senators to go pass resolutions either condemning Rush Limbaugh or condemning MoveOn.org? This is ludicrous. We have important stuff to deal with, and a lot of these members of Congress now feel caught in this trap that they're going to be keel-hauled by their respective sides if they don't do what they tell them. It ought to be an embarrassment.
You know, the people who brought those things to the floor are the polarizers in the House and the Senate, and then you're forced to vote on them. But, you know, I just want to make something clear here. Common Ground, our book, is not some Pollyannish, we're all going to sit around in a kumbaya moment here and cut the difference. And it is not a set of ideas. It's a process. It says that I have my position. I have partisan positions. I'm going to run on those. I'm hopefully going to win on those. But I recognize I'm not going to get 100% of what I want. There's an agenda that needs to get accomplished. So I'm willing to go to the table of common ground and not out to the battleground. And you can make polarization an issue. You can run against it. Common ground is tough politics. And it will take on polarization. And I think the time has come. And we think we saw the first stirrings of it in 2006. And I certainly think we're going to see it in 2008. The people are going to come vote against polarization. And that makes, particularly at the presidential level, I think that's going to make 2008 a very important sort of hinge year in American politics. It's time for this cycle to end.
Yeah, so who is there a candidate that's going to benefit from this vote against polarization, Bob Beckel?
I think the person who's coming closest to saying it now is Barack Obama. I mean, if you read his book, Audacity of Hope, it reads, the first three chapters reads like our book in Common Ground. And he recognizes the problem. The problem he's got now is he's running, frankly, in front of a polarized electorate. When you get down to the 100,000 people in Iowa who will vote in the Democratic caucuses. But in the long run, we're going to have the longest general election we've had with a non-incumbent in ever. It will probably know both nominees by the end of February. Whichever one of them gets out against polarization and talks about a policy agenda and takes the other person on if they're being polarizing themselves, I think that's good for 3, 4, 5 points in a presidential election. And if that's the case, as close as these elections have been, it'll make the difference. Mm-hmm. And look at Wisconsin. Wisconsin, Minnesota, you've got races up there. The presidential races have gone by 2 points, three
right,
points.
Right.
And so if you can get an anti-polarization vote, that's going to be a big advantage.
Yeah. Cal Thomas, what about on the Republican side in terms of the anti-polarization vote? Who benefits?
Well, I think, you know, Rudy Giuliani, of course, being a Republican, some conservatives would say in name only, but nevertheless, had to deal with Democrats in a heavily liberal Democratic city like New York, and did a pretty good job of it, as he often tells us. I think Mitt Romney is another one who had to work with Democrats in his state of Massachusetts. One of his defenses, of course, against conservatives who claim he's a flip-flopper is he would never have gotten done what he did get done, whatever you think that is, in Massachusetts, had he not worked with Democrats in an overwhelmingly Democratic state. I think there's something to be said for that. You don't sell out your principles when you're getting the best you can in the environment that exists. That's what politics is about. Too many people think it's my way or the highway, and they never get it. They'd rather be pure. And you hear a lot of this out of the Focus on the Family group and everything else. You know, I have a litmus test. I will never vote for somebody unless they believe in absolutely the following. Well, if you don't have anybody like that who is likely to get elected, then in politics you have to take your second choice, hoping to move the ball forward to your ultimate objective. But there are too many fundamentalists out there on both sides who want it 100% their way, and relatively little gets done when you have that kind of belief.
Another caller, Harry in Madison. Hi, Harry, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm not as smart as any of these two men, but I want to talk to America. I want Americans to remember, realize that they have a beautiful country and a beautiful society, but they're in danger of losing it. The Japanese have a day called the day of the respect for the aged. And one of the first things we need to remember is that we should respect our fellow Americans, regardless of what they think. And this thing starts most fundamentally at home and at school. And the football fields. We have to kill the opponent and we have to abuse them.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to hear you, Harry, so let me paraphrase this. Bipartisanship starts at home.
Well, yeah, we agree with that. And this is one of the reasons out on the lecture circuit, Joy, when we do this, to mixed audiences, Republicans and Democrats, and we finish off with the subject of patriotism. And I say that I resent my side, the conservative side, thinking that they have a copyright on patriotism. And I talk about my visit last year to Normandy and the American cemetery in France and how it didn't have any D's or R's for Democrat or Republican on the grave markers. And then Bob gets up and responds warmly and kindly, and it always brings down the house. The people want this. I mean, if we can just get the polarizers out of the way and the people once again realizing that we have the ultimate power to change our government to reflect the kind of government that we want. We don't have to succumb to the polarizers. We don't have to listen to this stuff like, you're ruining America. No, you're ruining America. If we want a different kind of country, and we want more civility, and we need to stand up and demand it from our leaders or put leaders in who will give it to us.
Yeah, Bob,
you know, the thing about this, Bob, the thing about the beginning at home, I agree with Harry on that. And, I think more people need to sit down with people who are the other side, a neighbor or somebody who may be of the other party, and listen to each other instead of shouting at each other. But most neighborhoods, people don't do that, as Cal pointed out. But I think there's only but so much we can do by reflecting the desire for common ground out there. It is there, it's palpable, but you have to go to the polls. And the key to this is we can talk all we want, but unless the people begin to talk with their feet and vote against polarizers, we're not going to get very far. I happen to think, and Cal thinks, that we're now seeing the American people stirring on this. And if they begin to cast votes against polarization, politicians are they pay a lot of attention to the last election. And if they see that happening, and they see somebody running on a common ground, part of their message is common ground, you'll see a lot of born-again common grounders, which is what we really hope will happen, but it will only happen if there's punishment dealt out to polarizers.
Well, I know that Harry, who we just had on the air, also wanted to talk about how we need more than two major parties, in his opinion, to really get rid of this polarization. Bob Beckel, we heard Cal Thomas talk a little bit about that before you had got on. What about that? Do we need more than two major parties?
Well, if it was doable, it would be wonderful. I just don't think. I mean, I've been in politics for a long time, and the thing about third party candidates is that they either can throw an election, they can't win an election. I mean, the closest that anybody ever came was Teddy Roosevelt, I think, in 1912, and Perot in 1992 ran up 19% of the vote, but Perot didn't win an electoral vote. And then, of course, in 2000, you could argue that Ralph Nader certainly took Florida away from Al Gore by getting 90,000 votes, most of which would have gone to Gore. But they can play a spoiler role. The problem is right now we need to stay united against polarization. And if we begin to disperse our votes out among a number of different parties and we decide to let our anger out by not voting for either the Democrats or the Republicans, we're still going to end up with Democrats and Republicans and that in power in Washington, either or. And so I would much prefer to see people recognize that at least now maybe in the future, but at least now we're dealing with a two-party system that needs to be fixed. And if we don't fix it by voting against the polarizers in either party and cast our votes in a third party, we're not going to make any progress.
We are talking with Bob Beckel and Cal Thomas, co-authors of the book Common Ground, How to Stop the Partisan War That Is Destroying America. They are also co-authors of the regular USA Today feature, Common Ground. Bob Beckel is a liberal, one of Washington's leading political analysts, longtime political consultant. Cal Thomas, conservative, writes a twice-weekly syndicated column that appears in more than 600 newspapers across the country and a frequent panelist on the Fox News Watch program. We welcome your thoughts and questions for them on how do we find common ground. Do you yearn for common ground? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock talking with the editor-at-large of the Atlantic Monthly, which is celebrating 150 years of publication. The best of the Atlantic Monthly coming up after 9. And then some laughs in store after 10 o'clock when Kathleen talks with the editor-in-chief of The Onion about the new satire book, Our Dumb World, Atlas of the Planet Earth, coming up after 10. We're talking with two guys, one a conservative, one a liberal, who say we need to find common ground in this country, that it is possible. They are the co-authors of the book Common Ground, How to Stop the Partisan War That Is Destroying America. And Mike in Cottage Grove is our next caller. Hi, Mike, you're on the air.
Good morning. I strongly disagree with your guess. I think all of the evidence shows just the opposite, that polarization does work. Take a look at the 2006 elections, MoveOn.org, the Democrats, Mr. Beckel's party, were extremely nasty and won seats. Hillary Clinton, the Clinton-type attack your enemy and disgrace them. Public universities are heavily polarized. Unions are heavily polarized. And they certainly carry that polarization into our K-12 schools. I think what both of these gentlemen are talking about is Pollyannish. It isn't going to change. And Mr. Thomas, I disagree with you. If Republicans and conservatives were to follow your lead in this, you would put us back into the perpetual minority. Yes, we might elect the president here or there, but we would never control anything in other types of elected bodies. I mean, the facts are this country is polarized. You're not going to change that. And neighbors do think these things. They may not yell at each other, but I'll tell you what, in my neighborhood, the union folks don't talk kindly of me in the sense of my political views. They may like me personally, but they don't agree with me, and they do see me as the enemy when I go to the ballot box.
Wow. Well, I guess we better just give it all up then. Bob, let's pull the book off the shelf and not appear on TV anymore. I just don't accept that. That's not true in my neighborhood. I get along fine with my neighbors of different persuasions. And I just don't, you know, again, out on the lecture circuit, we don't feel this way. I mean, I hate to quote Mao Zedong, but a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. You can accept things. We haven't accepted things in America. We didn't accept racism in the sense of denying African Americans equal rights and equal treatment. We didn't accept keeping women as second-class citizens. This is a country that is about advancing and improving. We realize we're not perfect in many ways, but we're constantly trying to reinvent and improve ourselves. If you agree that polarization is bad, as I think most people do, maybe you don't, and it's just used to put certain people in power and position who don't always, in fact, don't mostly, regardless of what party is in power. Look at what the Republicans did when they controlled Congress for 12 years. Why, we on the right said that if we could have unified government, if we could have a Republican president and a Republican Congress, my goodness, we'd solve everything from tooth decay to world peace. Well, it was a disaster, and Republicans wound up spending more than Democrats. This president didn't veto a single spending bill. He increased the size and reach of government. So I don't see how you can say that polarization is working. The Republicans screwed up badly.
Yeah,
well, let me add a couple of facts here to this caller, just so we get clear here about why he is desperately wrong. In 2006, the Democrats who won in districts were mostly districts that were moderate to conservative Republican districts. MoveOn.org had nothing to to do with that. These people are moderates. They ran against polarization, and 30 of them won. And they did not win in liberal, hardcore left or hardcore right districts. They won in the persuadable, moderate to conservative districts of this country, and they did it not with the help of polarizers. So that's one of the reasons. Look, we had almost 2 million more people vote in the last election than there were in the previous off-year election, the 2002 non-presidential election. Those 2 million people did not come out and vote for anybody, trust me. They came out and voted against people, and they voted against polarization. We've done our book talks about exit polls in those districts that I'm talking about, where the initial analysis was it was all about the war in Iraq. It was not all about the war in Iraq in those districts, because, frankly, in those districts, a lot of them were more supportive of the war in Iraq. It was clearly about how government was not working and that the polarization and the paralysis of government was unacceptable, and so they removed people who were in government. And that was the clear and concise analysis of what happened in 2006. It had nothing to do with far right and far left. In fact, the far right and the far left, the candidates of the far right and the far left were running from them before Election Day, trying to all of a sudden become common ground candidates. You should see these ads. They were run by people on the far right. I'm trying to find common ground. I'm looking for, you know, bipartisanship again. That wasn't about a partisan polarization at all. I mean, I don't know where you get your political analysis from, but I can tell you, go take another look at it.
Next, we go to Pat in Brantwood. Hi, Pat. You're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to congratulate them, and I hope that this takes root, because like your previous caller, I do see it in the people around me, that the people who are Republican want to watch Fox News, and that's all they want to watch, and that's where they get the information, and, you know, vice versa with other liberal media. But it goes back even, I mean, really far, because when I was teaching kindergarten and Michael Dukakis was running, and the Weekly Reader came out with a paper that had the pictures of both candidates. And one of my 6-year-olds said, well, you can't vote for Michael him, because he wants to kill babies. And that was because he was pro-choice, not because, you know, he wanted to kill babies.
Yeah.
And so it does infect the population, and it does infect people, and they do say things like that.
Yeah. You know. And it's been going on a long time, Cal Thomas?
Well, it has, yes. And I one of the lady, the caller, Pat, brings up the issue of abortion. Bob and I, this is a very, very contentious social issue. We come to an agreement, a common ground agreement, without a Supreme Court decision, without a legislative act, without an executive order. Even liberal Democrats say they want to make abortion safe, legal, and rare. So we focus on the rare part, while not ignoring the judicial and legislative aspects. We think that giving women more information that will allow their choices to be more fully informed has shown through various surveys and polls that you can reduce the number of abortions and increase the number of adoptions. There are many, many people waiting in line to adopt babies in this country, and it's been my personal experience in speaking before a lot of pro-life and crisis pregnancy center groups and speaking to women who have had abortions. Many of them with whom I have spoken said if they had had more information, they would have made a different choice. So this is a way, without restricting anybody's rights, to give them more information like they do when they go to the supermarket with those labels on bottles, packages, and cans.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I think what Pat was saying here about that's a clear example about Michael Dukakis, that he wants to kill babies rather than he's mm-hmm. pro-choice. That's the kind of rhetoric that is what polarizers live off of. And they get away with it because there's not voices in response to it, because they're intimidating. We say in the book, we use the metaphor of the Wizard of Oz. You go in, and when Dorothy went in and saw the wizard, he was big and a lot of smoke and scary fella. And so they pulled the curtain back and found that he was this little guy behind the curtain. Well, that's what polarizers are. I mean, they are people who are bullies when they're together and in numbers, and they're loud. But I'll tell you, they're a distinct minority in this country. And does anybody really believe that Ann Coulter could sell her intellectually challenged books, or for that matter, Michael Moore could do his selectively edited movies and sell tickets to it if it wasn't for a polarized society? We've got to keep in mind here, these polarizers make a living off of this. The average American doesn't live off of polarization. If it wasn't for polarization, there'd be a lot of people out of business. Whether it's from, you know, talk radio to cable television to Ann Coulter, They thrive on this, and they have every interest in keeping us apart. And so they come up with these great supposedly political analysis that says we're red state, blue state. We're not red state, blue state. That's one of the biggest myths that's been perpetrated on the American populace in my lifetime. And there are, yes, there are some states that vote heavily Republican, others that vote heavily Republican, but most states are in the middle.
Yeah, we're purple.
And most people are in the middle. They're purple. That's yeah. Right. They're, and the other thing about a culture war, there's not a culture war in America. I mean, everybody doesn't get up in the morning and say, all right, let me go get my rucksack and my M16 so I can get out into the trenches on the culture war. It doesn't exist except among polarizers. But they're the ones that are heard. They're the ones that get the headlines. And
yeah.
Now it's time for you to respond.
Yeah. Did you want to say something, Cal?
Can I add something real quick to that?
Mm-hmm, sure.
I talked earlier at the top before Bob joined us about sitting in these marketing meetings at Moral Majority for 5 years. I asked a polarizer, a fundraiser was a polarizer in the early days, how come you never send out a positive letter with what you're doing with people's money? And he looked at me and said, you can't raise money on a positive. So The dirty little secret here is that success is the great enemy of the polarizers. If racial harmony broke out in America, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton have to get real work. You got to always stir the pot. The enemy has always got to be coming. You've got to sow the seeds of fear, and that's what so many on both sides are doing. And the only people benefiting are those who get checks for it.
Now we go to Janice in La Crosse. Hi, Janice.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, Joy, and your guests. And you just reiterated what I'm saying. It makes me sick. I'm a Catholic pro-life citizen, and I'm so frustrated with this whole outfit here in this country that I just want to scream. And, you know, it's like, why do we not work for peace in this country? And in every aspect, everybody is aggressive, just like what you're telling, you know. I mean, it's a negative thing. It's negativity on everything. I am so tired of this. It's like, let's uplift this whole country and the world and work for the betterment of everybody and have that as our objective and as peace and not this war and aggression that keeps pulling all of us down.
Thank you very much, Janice. So how do we do that, Bob Beckel?
Well, I think we can do that, and that's the thing that we have abandoned the stage to the polarizers in American politics. It was for a very long time, actually since the Civil War, bipartisanship is what held this country together. If you look at any major piece of legislation that has significantly impacted this country, it has been on a bipartisan basis. You cannot do it on a polarized one side versus the other side basis. And so if we really want, and I think the vast majority of American people want what your caller just said, then the way to do that is that we have to go up against the polarizer. We just can't sit back and complain about it. We've written about it. We've exposed them. We've named them. And believe me, we've both gotten a lot of heat. I mean, I named Harry Reid as a polarizer in the book, and Harry Reid's people are friends of mine. They came down on me like a ton of bricks. But the fact of the matter is that Harry Reid, he was a former boxer, and he seems to take that attitude on the floor of the Senate. He does want to win, but not. He wants a victory on the battlefield, but not necessarily progress that might in any way indicate that George Bush gets any credit for anything. I mean, I don't believe me when I tell you. It's hard to find somebody who doesn't like George Bush more than me. I mean, he keeps me awake at night. But having said that, I will say this: that even I would be willing to accept George Bush getting some credit for something if we got something that was progress and not this constant idea that we're going out there not to be to achieve policy success, but to win political victories. And that is the clear distinction between polarizers and people who approach things in a bipartisan fashion.
Yeah. Is President Bush a polarizer?
Absolutely. Yeah. We write in our book the poster children for polarization were Bill Clinton and George Bush. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that nobody like Bill Clinton can stir up the Republican right more than Bill Clinton. And conversely, nobody stirs up the Democratic left like George Bush. And both of them came in for 16 years in the middle of polarization. They didn't come in, I don't think, necessarily to polarize. I don't think that was their idea. But by the actions of the people who supported them and by, you know, the din of politics being taken over by polarizers, they became the focal points of polarization. Now we've got an opportunity to move on beyond that. And I think a presidential candidate who can articulate that they are not going to be polarizers, and in fact that they want to run against polarization, can win an election. If they do that, then they have a mandate. Not the typical when they say in the fall of a presidential season, I want to come to Washington and change the tone. Everybody says that. You got to run on it. You got to run on it early.
Yeah, Cal Thomas, so you want to talk about Janice's comments? Janice saying she's a pro-life Catholic who's against the war in Iraq, and why can't we all work together?
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have wars and rumors of wars until the end of time. And war is always a last resort, or always should be a last resort. There are people who argue that this war was not a last resort, that a lot of mistakes were made, the intelligence was wrong, and we should have done other things. And that's a valid argument to make, and it's something that ought to be debated. But the whole idea of we're going to give up war is just not going to happen. Israel doesn't want war. The United States doesn't want war. But there are people who make war on us. The natural state of humanity is not freedom. Otherwise, everybody would be free. If you look around the world, most of the world is in bondage to unelected dictators who oppress freedom and want to do it to others. We've had dictators throughout the history of humanity. We defeated some in the Cold War and the Hot War of World War II, but there are always others to take their place. Now, you have this religious political marriage, some call it Islamofascism, that feels they have a mandate from their God to kill and dominate everybody who doesn't agree exactly as they do. Now, you can either lay down your arms and allow them to do it, or you can oppose it if you want to maintain the country that we have. So it's not as simple as that, but I do think that if we are going to go to war, I believe in the Colin Powell doctrine, which was not sufficiently implemented in Iraq, then you have to apply the sufficient force to get the job done as quickly as possible and get out as rapidly as possible.
Let's keep in mind, though, she also made this point, we don't need to go to war against ourselves, and that's the
true
problem.
Yes.
Here. We are in the middle of the polarizers want a second American Civil War. And what we're saying is that is exactly their goal, to keep us divided, and we believe the majority of people want common ground. And the common ground, because it's the majority opinion of most people, eventually will wear polarization down. We need to push this anger out there that's palpable and real, and you need to take charge of it, and we think it can be done. And these people, these polarizers, are not nearly as tough as they think they are. We know who they are, but we were part of them for a while. These people, frankly, are like schoolyard bullies. You know, they're real tough when they're all together, but take them one at a time and they run away. Polarizers, I want to be very blunt about this, are punks. But they are punks. There's a lot with big voices, and it's time to fight back against them. They are not that tough. They are not that intimidating. They want you to think that, and they've got a lot of people believe it. And we're here saying it's snake oil. It's a three-card Monte game. And it ought to be approached as exactly what it is and taken on with common ground.
That has to be the last word. We're at the end of the hour. You struck a nerve. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Cal Thomas and Bob Beckel, co-authors of Common Ground, How to Stop the Partisan War That is Destroying America. Cal Thomas, a conservative, also writes a syndicated column, and he is a frequent panelist on the Fox News Watch program. Bob Beckel, a liberal, one of Washington's leading political analysts, and a longtime political consultant. Thanks to Carmen Jackson and to Christina Taylor for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.